The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 5 minutes past nine, or 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 7th of August, 2026. Do hope you're very well. Great to have you on board for another busy 2 hours. We've got lots coming up. We've got a Friday panel. We've got in-studio guests. We're going to preview this week's podcast, that and so much more besides. The lines are open for you right now, though, 086 60 25000 to get involved in the conversation. WhatsApps or text to 086 60 25000. Now give us a call on 074 91 25000. Email also comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, hop on YouTube. You can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, your mobile devices, Highland Radio Ireland. And we're on Facebook. And we're back on X randomly. I don't know. Maybe they changed their KPIs or APIs or whatever it is. Right. Let's say good morning to our Friday panel. John McIntyre, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Editor of the Chicanal Tribune, in case it slipped your mind. I'm only joking, that's for the listeners. India Kennedy Campaigns and Events Director with Ography in the Fall. How are you?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Are you joining us from Brussels, or are you back
No,
home?
I'm joining you from the hills of Donegal, thank God. I'm home for a week of work, so nice to be home.
Nice. And Dr. Joe Kelly, historian and teacher, Maidhin Wai, Dr. Joe?
Maidhin Wai, good hen, Greg, is the Loch Déistíochta. Good morning to yourself and all listening in Highland Radio.
How are you enjoying your fully paid holidays?
Fully paid holidays that I have to work very hard for the rest.
Don't be so reactive. I'm only joking here. It's great to have all three of you on board. The lines melted effectively during the week. And I know, Joe, you're in the west of the county, and you're primarily in the south. And I don't be through Letterkenny too much, but John does, and we all do to some extent. But we have to talk about the traffic. We've got lots to get through, so we won't dwell too long on it. But with mounting anger among commuters and business owners over major gridlocks across Letterkenny this week, pressure is building on the local authority as some call for active travel roadworks to be halted altogether. Given the looming return of schools later this month and into September, should Donegal County Council pause these active travel projects and put an immediate traffic mitigation plan in place? Or must the town endure short-term gridlock, medium-term gridlock, I would say, to deliver its long-term infrastructural goals? Like, I'll start with you, John, if that's okay. I mean, we heard from Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly yesterday. Stop them right now, and others saying literally, quite simply, undo them. The carriageways have been narrowed. We've got cycle paths, footpaths as wide as roads. Double access to junctions has been reduced to single access. And we saw a small collision in Letterkenny literally bring the town to a standstill. But are we too far down the line to do anything about it, John?
You're never too far down the line, and this is an absolute situation of chaos, and it's getting worse with every passing week. The reality is active travel is meant to keep vehicles off the road. It's just for cycling, it's for walking. There was no mention of e-scooters at the time that this was dreamed up. But not Letterkenny is gridlocked. It's getting worse. The more work that goes on, because it's quite mad-looking work. You know, you're coming down from Glencairn to turn right there at the hospital roundabout, and you're actually out across the white line there. There's a lot of traffic on all the junctions. There's a lot of money being invested. In my opinion, there's a lot of money being wasted here. There's no doubt that there were some minor works needed, but the kind of work that's ongoing there with these cycleways and with these footpaths, the town's not big enough for that. We would need to build a town around the active travel projects. We're spending about 11 million this year. This year alone, there's a new allocation of 11 million. Out around the Ballyrain is also very, very bad. But you can see what's going on there is to stop people like us from going into town. And that's the sole purpose of it, to reduce traffic levels by 30%, to reduce parking by 30% by 2030. It's utter madness like that. The one thing that I will say here at the very top of the programme, Letterkenny has gone downhill since we lost the town council. They had a very active 9-member town council. They had a very good town council in Buncrana and in Bundoran and Ballyshannon. The town seems to have lost control of its own destiny. It's not that we don't have very good proactive politicians in town, but they're not being listened to. The council seems to be in a bind as well, because they have to come up with matching funds. And I mean, back in June, we reported in the paper that they were going to try and get the budget allocations allocated by before the middle of July, because they wanted matching funds and they wanted to see how the programmes might look. Now, that should not be happening, but at least the councillors had their way there, and that is not happening. But I can see the problems that the councillors are on, because for all of these projects, if you get 10 million, you're probably going to have the council having to donate about two million in matching funds. They don't have that money, so they come at us, the ratepayers, to see how much of it we can pay. So they intended to increase the rates by 5% per year over the next 4 years. And I think it's time to call that out and to say no to it. So far, the councillors have rejected it, and I hope that they can go on doing that, because the council has to find a better way. Let it be in readdressing and in realigning the work that's already done, because generally speaking, from talking to truck drivers, most of that work is going to have to be redone over the years as trucks become longer and longer. And like at the end of the day, if we don't get into Letterkenny, where do we go?
The TEN-T, there's various predictions as to when it'll be concluded. I mean, I'm perhaps a default cynic, but I can't imagine Letterkenny will feel the full benefits of the TEN-T for 10 years. And like, it doesn't feel like that could happen when you see how slowly things move. So that means the narrowed roads, etc., would have to be endured by the town for 10 years, potentially. Can it survive that, John?
No, it can't, actually. The reality here is that Letterkenny has got a name now. I mean, I was due to go into Letterkenny yesterday, and I had somebody contacting me just about this time yesterday morning to avoid it, if I could. I'll see what it's like later on this afternoon. If I get any inkling that there's going to be delays, I won't go in there. And the general public is reacting that way as well. And like on the back of that, we are totally dependent on truck traffic. We're dependent on diesel engines to bring everything into the county and out of it. And a lot of that has to come through Letterkenny. We're doing nothing to ease the traffic congestion. We're promoting active travel. I think nationally there's about up to 400 million, maybe 390 million being spent this year on active travel. It's the same last year. Those things are all brilliant and excellent, but let's look at the roads first and see how we can get traffic flowing, get traffic moving.
Well, can I put it to you, if we were post-10T, and the West Donegal, Northwest Donegal traffic has been taken out of Letterkenny, and people who are looking to go somewhere else but not through that traffic are being taken away from it, this work would be welcome then, can I presume that? You know, at that point, there'd be three town buses running. We might be in flying cars. No, but there'd be three. But my point is, though, would this work be welcomed then, John?
Probably not, because we're talking 40 years ago at town council meetings about town buses. There isn't space in town for buses. There isn't space for traffic. The increase in traffic has grown exponentially beyond the size of the roundabouts that are there. The Polestar is the only roundabout that is of some middling size. It's probably far too small. The idea of taking the bridge to Swally has been rooted as far back as 40 years ago, but it's going to be much further out past Castle Sharon. It's going to be much closer to the town. And the potential there, Greg, is that you may be moving the gridlock on the Polestar further out past Thomas Keyes is there. Mm. And that's the big fear, because we're talking about the TEN-T project costing 800 million up to €1 billion. That's a long-term project. 2032 would be the guideline for its completion. Probably add 5 years onto that, the way things go and the way things get delayed and the way things get overpriced and delayed. Letterkenny is a disaster area. I wish I could say otherwise. I spent a good lot of my life working there and I love the town. Because where in the hell else can you go in this county if you don't go to Letterkenny?
Well, I'm going to go to India Kennedy now. And India, I don't know about you, but we're both from the south of the county. My natural hub would be Enniskill and Oswego, to be honest with you. And, you know, if you're going for a big shop or something, it wouldn't necessarily, when I was growing up, ordinarily have been Letterkenny. So to answer John, in certain parts of the county, it probably wouldn't be Letterkenny. But anyway, what's your view on all of this?
I just think, I mean, Greg, we spoke about this in October. We spoke about this in January. This is something you've been regularly highlighting on the show. I think one thing you have to ask is, who's going to take accountability for it? Who's actually going to stand back that designed this project and pushed this project through? Who from that is going to stand back and say, God, this is a great job? I spoke to a relative who travelled from Donegal Town to Letterkenny on Wednesday, and it took them 2 hours to get from Donegal Town to the Polestar roundabout. Like, Donegal is at the cusp now of being one of the biggest tourism counties in Ireland. But sure, if you're looking at the back of a bumper and you're not looking at the Wild Atlantic Way, nobody's going to want to travel to Donegal. I think it's unfortunate for Letterkenny too, for the businesses that are really struggling, because anybody that I'm speaking to, like you said, Greg, they're avoiding Letterkenny. And like John said, nobody wants to go because why would you want to sit in traffic? I think as well, there's a major issue with safety. Like, there's a bike lane there, and when an ambulance is trying to get through, where are cars supposed to go? Are they supposed to go up onto the bike lane? Are they supposed to go to the concrete bollard? Like, something
Well, you
seriously
see,
wrong.
you highlighted something that is actually almost unbelievable in that you're referencing the four lanes into Letterkenny that cannot accommodate an emergency vehicle. I mean, it is actually unbelievable. €16 million for cycle lanes that aren't used and no capacity for an emergency vehicle to our main hospital. I mean, sometimes I think we don't realise how crazy that situation is. 16 mil for that. And now, you know, multiple more millions to force people to cross illegally on. Go ahead.
But then, like, obviously paramedics have to do their job, and if they have somebody in the back of the ambulance that is very sick and they have to make a split second call and they, you know, break the rules of the road, it's them that has to be held accountable for it. It's not the engineers that made mistakes. I think the only way you're going to solve that is if you make the bike lane accessible for emergency vehicles. But then, of course, you run the risk of cars cutting into the bike lanes and using the bike lanes for themselves. I just think, like John said, it's going to have to be lifted. It was lifted in Sligo when mistakes were made. Tully Earl Junction was lifted. But it's the same in Donegal Town. You know, active travel is very pushed on there. And you mentioned short-term delays. It's 2 years on in Donegal Town, and there's still traffic congestions and businesses are still suffering. So I think the biggest issue is probably the one-size-fits-all measure that the council seem to continuously
Well,
use.
Donegal Town's an interesting example because it has its bypass.
It does have its
so it
bypass, but
should theoretically be perfectly set for that combination between road traffic and bikes and pedestrians, and it's not.
absolutely. But then there's a lot of people that tourists that want to come to Donegal Town. You know, there's locals that want to do their shopping in Donegal Town. There's people that work in Donegal Town. They have to use the post office. They might want to go for lunch, but they're getting as far as the Blas roundabout. They're seeing the traffic congestions. They're turning and they're going away. So when businesses are suffering in Donegal Town and Letterkenny, when people are stuck in traffic, everybody's complaining, everybody's frustrated. How can somebody actually step back and say, this is a great job? I think somebody definitely needs to take accountability for this.
Who should that be? Dr. Kelly, your overview, I suppose, and what you think we should be doing.
Well, my father, God rest him, had one wise statement. When you have a problem, take the problem to where it is and leave the problem where the problem is. And in fairness, all the talk that's been on your show recently, you just haven't taken the problem to where it is. And if you can indulge me a minute, the problem is policy. And policy is directed right back up to the UN sustainable goals. This is climate action in reality for us that use Letterkenny. I use Letterkenny quite regularly. And for the people sitting in traffic today, this is the eco agenda in action. So, goal 13 and 11 of the sustainable goals of the UN about climate change and about sustainable cities mandates. 193 countries have signed up to this, including Ireland. And Ireland have delegated the responsibility for some of these action plans to, for example, the National Transport Authority, the NTA. And if you read the National Transport, nothing's going to change here. And people sitting in your cars today, get used to it. This is what's been dictated by policy. And policy is nobody. This is policy that has been made, handed down from institution to institution. And the National Transport Authority has a Cycle Connects initiative. And if you read the language, it mandates, it makes it compulsory that any town over 5,000 people must have high quality cycling lanes. There is no choice in this.
But is that not a good thing? Like, I mean, it feels like it should be a good thing, but after the 10T,
But the point is, this is the point, and so India's talking about, you know, somebody's to blame. Somebody is nobody. Nobody is policy. You can't bring somebody on your show. No politician, no minister can actually do anything about this because this is directed policy and it's not going to improve.
I just want to push back a little bit on that because I know where you're coming from because that is the acorn. But the truth is as well, 37 councillors had a vote on these plans and they were passed.
No, they had a vote as to whether they would accept the money or not, but they don't have a vote on the policy.
India, come back in there.
Policy has been dictated by the government, which has accepted the UN goals.
Yeah, top down.
The policy doesn't care about people. It doesn't care about the ambulance. It doesn't care about whether you're inconvenienced. It cares only about the policy. And we have eco warriors that are... And this is an eco battle that's been fought.
I get you. Just before I bring India back in, though, I know what you're saying. It doesn't care about ambulances. But someone sat down with a pen and paper and the... at the four lanes, and they built a concrete bollard in the middle, and they designed it with high steps either side so that cars couldn't get out of the way of the ambulance. I get where you're coming from, that this is top down from the UN, and you've quoted the lines and all that, but the bottom line is that road still could have been designed better.
But policy dictates that this must happen. How you do that is irrelevant, whether you colour the road red or pink or green. But the policy is that it is there. And just one more example of mad policy, particularly by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They bought 150-odd electric buses at the cost of, £300 or £400 million that they didn't have charging points for, that are sitting now in fields that can't be used at, and we're paying, the taxpayers paid for these electric buses. We've paying now for $7 million a year. We're paying for these buses to be parked up because policy dictated we must get electric buses, but policy didn't dictate that we figure out how we're going to electrify these buses, how we're going to store these buses. Policy trumps reality.
Okay.
Policy trumps people. And this is the dictations coming from our government. They don't care. The only thing important is policy. And if you're sitting in your car frustrated today, it's because the government only cares about policy and the implementation of policy.
India, Kennedy.
Well, I think there's a few issues here. When you get a policy document, it doesn't matter where you get it from, whether it's the UN, whether it's the European Union, or whether it's the government. You get a policy document and you get a list of rules which say, this is the guidelines you should follow. Here's your funding allocations. It wasn't this policy document that designed the road in Letterkenny. It was engineers paid for by the council that designed it. It was just like Donegal Town. Engineers were paid. They based their roads off different areas in Ireland, and mistakes were made. So ultimately, it's the engineers that were held accountable. And Greg was right when he said that the 37 councillors voted on it. They did vote on it. They were given the opportunity to make allocations. They were given the opportunity to make changes or any kind of recommendations. It's not the policy, and it is able to be fixed. Policies are recommendations. They're document. They are, yeah. That's how policy works.
Absolutely not. And we've had a tradition in this country, and you know, you've worked for any MEP in Europe, that we get these directives from Europe and then it becomes dictated.
But are you, yes, but you, like, that's, yeah, but that's like saying I come to work at Highland Radio and then I have a meeting with management and we talk about the show and then I agree that I'll present the show in a certain way. And then at the end of it saying, well, this is a dictatorship. I'm being told what to do. It's top-down approach. The management are insisting I do. We're part of it. We're formulating this. You know, it's not like there's a conspiracy to beat us down. We've signed up for it. Whether we like it or not, as the electorate, we vote in those that agree to it. There's not a big reveal here or a big curtain pullback. That's what happens. We part of the EU. The EU creates policy. We vote the policy, and then it goes to national government, then down to local government. There's not a conspiracy there, Joe.
Absolutely is, Greg. And again, India maybe can explain this better than I, having worked in the EU for Cynthia Waterhouse. Here's what you need to know, Greg. Since the year 2000, that's 26 years. Ireland has passed 15,000 laws. Our government, our TDs, have passed 15,000 laws between ministerial directives and whatnot. On top of those 15,000 laws, Europe has passed another 35,000 laws. That's 50,000 laws that have been passed in 26 years. That works out at 37 laws a week.
But what does that mean?
It means that we're being regulated by policy and we don't ask for these laws. These are dictates coming from unelected bureaucrats in our governments and in our NGOs, and they're going to tell us how we are to live. And we're being told we vote for people to decide. Our councillors are being hamstrung. We have good, decent councillors. And I agree with John when the town councils were there. I believe I have.
But they also have to operate under policies. John, come back in here. I'll go back to India as well, because there was a lot of stuff being chucked about there. Not that sounds like it was done in its bad phraseology.
I don't have any reason to disagree with anything that Indiana or Joe has said. They're absolutely right. There's this thing now about consultants. Everything has been pushed out into this ether of nothingness. Consultants are everywhere, but who are they? There are environmental consultants. There are all kinds of consultants. It's probably the council probably has very little say in any of this, because that money is coming down. 80% of it is coming from EU, 20% of it is coming from the local authorities, and we end up as ratepayers being screwed to the floor. For what? Because like we need money, we need traffic, we need to get from A to B in a fair bit of a hurry. I think the council has been held hostage here, and all the councils. I think the Irish government would need to. The cabinet would need to sort of fess up and try and look at what we can do about stopping this. As I said at the top of the programme, we need to get our town councils back. We need to give a voice back to the people through our local representatives. We have our TDs in Leinster House. They probably have very little say in it as well, Joe. It seems to have got so far out of control. We all can see the madness. You drive around from Glencairn, as I said earlier on there, down around the hospital. And if you're thinking about getting into the hospital, you wonder what's the best way in here. Should you climb over a fence or something like that? Like, at the end of the day, madness personified has been allowed to take over the whole diktat of roadworks and all that. And all the while, those of us who are driving, getting deliveries, waiting for deliveries, we're forgotten about. The ordinary people who pay the rates, the ordinary people who have to live in town, they're forgotten about. And I mean, our politicians need to have a much stronger voice, but they're obliged almost when there's a big lump of money coming down to Donegal of 11 million this year for active travel and greenways. Politicians are obliged to welcome it as if it's the greatest thing that ever happened. They know in their hearts that what they're seeing in Letterkenny is an absolute and a totally unmitigated disaster. And someday in the next 20 years, somebody will say to themselves, you know, we made a complete balls up out of this here. We must go back.
But when are they going to say that? Because we're seeing it in real time. And Joe, back to you just in relation to the overreach. And I don't disagree with you whatsoever, but you want it frank and straight for our listeners as well. Like, when you say 26,000 laws over the course of whatever amount of years, you know what you're talking about there as well. You know, it's setting tariffs. It's determining legislation on e-chargers. Some of those laws or legal stuff that you referred to there, they only last a couple of days and have to be redone over and over again. It's real technical crap that really we shouldn't have to do. It's not telling us how straight our bananas should be or how loud our lawnmowers should be or that we all must walk to work. You know, when you quote figures like that, you know yourself, a lot of that, the 85% of them are technical nonsense.
But just interesting, and maybe I ask your listeners, our TDs, there's 50,000 laws between the EU and our government. I wonder if you brought a TD from Donegal on and asked them what 37 laws have they sanctioned this week into law? Because it has to get governmental consent. They won't be able to tell you. So we're signing documents through our politicians and they don't even know themselves what they're signing, because we have a party whip system. You sign up, you line up like good boys and girls and you sign the dotted line. That's the kind of politics we've been having. We've had this discussion before. And unfortunately, what's happening in Letterkenny is an ideological war between climate change policy of the UN, and it's been brought back down to the basic person sitting in the car. And we can't blame the council. We can't blame planning. planners. Okay, planners can dance around, change lanes this way and that way, but the policy must always be supreme, and we are irrelevant in the scheme of policies. And it's over-regulation, everything, yeah. Not just the frustration I have as a driver in Letterkenny. Farmers have been enduring this for years. Fishermen have been enduring this for years. This is policy in action.
Okay, just for an example, the most recent 10 Acts signed into law in Ireland, as you say, the TDs probably had no sign of it, but the development strategic gas reserve, Israel settlement in the occupied Palestinian territory, criminal law, civil law and defence, housing and residential tenancies, health, provision of contraception, didn't know that was happening, regulation of artificial intelligence, guardianship of infants and childcare, domestic violence judgment, register, postal and telecommunication services and planning and development. Those were the last 10 law changes in Ireland, but would we expect anyone to be across
like
that?
What exactly do they mean? What do they mean?
Just technical nonsense.
Like every new law comes out is just put on a shelf and forgotten about. And for the next 10 years, officialdom can keep referring to this law as if it's the way our lives have to be led. There's okay. Thousands and thousands of laws there sitting in government buildings, gathering dust on shelves all over the place, have been since the foundation of the state. And things have gradually got worse and worse. Ordinary people, and you probably will comment on that, Joe, ordinary people have lost control of their lives to the failure of the political system. And it's the political system that needs to be overhauled to give power back to the people.
Okay.
We haven't got that, but we need it. So where do we start there?
That's another 3 hours. Just before the break, India, did you want to come back in there?
I just want to, like, there is some points that you've made, Joe and John, that I do agree with, but 50,000 laws, that's not democracy, or that's not a dictatorship, that's democracy. And within them 50,000 laws, yes, there is laws that don't make mistakes, but there's also laws that, like Coco's law and Jenny's law, that protect violence against women. There's laws that are implemented to protect our children and improve our health qualities and our qualities of teaching of children. That is what living in a democracy is. If we said, right, stop all these laws, it would be free for all. Everybody would be running around. You could go up into the street and shoot someone if you wanted, because there's no laws to prevent
it. My understanding as well, too, was like, say the likes of road traffic legislation, it is designed to be challenged and adapted, or child welfare legislation to be challenged. Is that not what we have the opposition for and the legal system, that it's nuanced and does change regularly?
I think there's a bit of misinformation here. You can't just wake up in the morning and put a law pass. A law has to go in through the Seanad, and then it has to be made
Well, we can go back to the COVID times and completely.
Well, that was extenuating circumstances.
But I mean, there's always extenuating circumstances if you want to get something over the line. You talked about the defective concrete block bill. They rushed that through. They got rid of any public scrutiny of it. So listen, I have no faith in the mistakes made. There were decisions taken. There was decisions taken to railroad through important legislation that affects tens of thousands of people. I don't have faith in that, the system, the Dáil, the Seanad and the president to protect the public, to be honest with you. That's not a criticism of any of them, but they clearly can be bypassed when it suits.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah. But there's also laws that are protecting us and keeping us safe.
Fantastic,
I think you can't say that 50,000 laws are all a dictatorship. Like, that's not true.
Okay, like, go on, John.
Like, the reality here is that over 80% of our laws come down from the EU and we have no control over them at all. And Indiana, when you talk about Coco's
law... It's India, because every time I start hearing the theme tune to Indiana Jones, every time you say it's India. Go ahead, John.
India, listen, all of those laws to protect people are brilliant, but they're enforced. Are they implemented? Are they? They are not. They are not, because we do not have the ability to protect people, vulnerable people, women's rights, all of these things. You can adopt legislation. You have to be sure that you can enforce it and that you have the wherewithal and the ways of doing it.
It is a very good point John makes too, though, because, you know, and I've spoken to MEP Maria Walsh on this, you know, proper, actual, real legislation that would make the big difference in the lives of women and others is being blocked by countries within this union that have no interest in that as well. Joe, is there anything you want to add before we move on in relation to that? Because obviously you know, you were hitting hard, so there was some challenges there. Yeah, look, I want to be fair. Hard,
but look, isn't it it's a pity our government and democracy wasn't like what we're having this morning on the show, where we can have disagreements and different views and find common sense in the middle. But unfortunately, I mean, just to figure 50,000 laws in 26 years for me is a very...
Yes, but Joe, 85% of them are short-lived. They're technical, they're tariffs, they're all that kind of stuff, you know.
But the devil is in the laws that we, you know, the other, say, 15%. The devil
is in... I get you. No, no, it's...
Take, for example, at the moment, you know, we're talking about drivers being cooked in Letterkenny. We're sitting in traffic all the time. You know, there's new laws coming out very shortly in future that our cars must have cameras, all these different things that cars must be fitted for. These are laws that were made 5 years ago that are only now being implemented by the EU. Forcing
cameras pointing at you, by the way, is what you're on about. Yeah, so at the driver.
Who's going to be watching us? I mean, if you look at the modern car today, if anybody's bought a car in the last 2 years, you have the road alignment. If you go across the road, it pushes you back, which is not practical in rural Donegal because the roads aren't totally the same length.
I think it only works if there's lines on the road. But I do understand what you're saying. I'll stay with you, Joe. With the Department of Children and Equality launching its action plan under the National Strategy for Women and Girls, specifically targeting online manosphere content and this traditional trad wife trend and others that are going around, it's going to be through awareness campaigns and educational programs. Does the state have a responsibility to actively counter digital algorithms shaping young minds and attitudes? Or does intervening in personal lifestyle choices, like maybe if you wanted to be a traditional wife or a husband, if they are interfering in that space, does it risk undermining women who genuinely choose traditional roles? And maybe it's overstepping into parental authority. What do you think?
Well, the manosphere, to explain to, and you have explained it to your listeners, is the idea that men are talking about the lives they want and where women would be traditionally at home, and maybe the way they talk about women and maybe older traditional family values. But the same report says that there's no evidence that people in Ireland or young men are being influenced by this. So what I think at the moment is, like, it's a form of I think, schizophrenia by the Fianna Fáil-led government that are pushing this. I have to say this because, first of all, to say that we need to have this. They can't tell us what a woman is. Micheál Martin can't tell us what a woman is.
I think he's clarified that. I think he's clarified that since.
Policy. It's through the whole policy. A man can be a woman and a woman can be a man. The last referendum, Fianna Fáil led the charge to remove the word mother from the Constitution, 41.2. It's a dirty word to say the word mother. And dare a mother stay at home? It's a dirty thing for policy. And they tried to get rid of a referendum, yet in Donegal, 84% of us voted no, and we pushed it back. But this is them trying to come in now another way. The third thing I'll say is, if you have mothers that stay at home, they lose the taxation. They don't have the two incomes, and that can't happen. We must have women out working and also trying to rear families, and we must get the tax out of them. And then where I see the schizophrenia is this, that they're concerned about young men having traditional values, and yet under the present government, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, for the last 20 years, we have had 998,000 immigrants come into this country, mostly men, mostly holding views that would be very, very different to very much anti-feminine in some cases and misogynistic in many cases, particularly maybe coming from the Muslim tradition. And here they're opening the borders to that view to import all these men into our country, but they're going to turn around and hit the ordinary man, a young fella that might have traditional family views and would like to have a wife and a home and a family and a mother. But these are all dirty things.
But the manosphere, I get where you're coming from. The manosphere goes far sort of beyond that. But I suppose actually really that maybe is its core. India, interested in your views in relation to this, because maybe you might not go as far as Joe has, but there is this danger that it does sort of pressure women into, you know, thinking that what might be classed as a more traditional lifestyle is a bad thing.
I don't particularly think that. I do think that the state does have a role to play in helping young people develop critical thinking skills online. Like, the manosphere is a massive issue. It's not just about, you know, the traditional views of women. It's the horrific ways which men like Andrew Tate describe women and describe the place of a woman in this society. And it's disgusting. And more young boys are being subjected to this talk online, and they think that this is normal. They think it's okay to speak about women in disgusting and derogatory ways. I think a woman has their own right to decide whether they want to stay at home, whether they want to have a career. But you see the likes of Maria Walsh, who is showing us you can do both. It doesn't matter what you do, you can do both. I don't think the government has a role to play in saying, well, you're going to stay at home and have a child, or you're going to work. I think more and more now we're seeing where women do have the choice. A lot of women are deciding to stay at home and raise their kids, and that's okay. That's okay within society. But a lot of women are choosing to have a career and maybe have kids later on in life, and that's okay too. It's not up to other, you know, politicians to decide that. And it's more the issue of abuse online that women are subjected to from other women. Now, that's probably the biggest issue. You know, other women are saying, you know, this isn't right. You should be working. But then if a woman chooses a career over a child, it's you should be at home. You should be raising kids. Not every woman wants kids. Not every woman can have kids. And that's a big issue as well. But the biggest issue here is
what's happening as well, too, actually, you know, taking your views, taking Joe's views and mixing them all up. The actual, you're both right, but in the way that it all points to women being held down, whether it in one form or other. So whether it's coming from the online influence from women or from men, or even to some extent, it could be argued from the state. The end result in all of it, even though you have different views, the same victim is the woman and her rights.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's in so many aspects. Like, Greg, during the week you had female politicians on talking about their abuses online, and the abuse that women are subjected to online as politicians is disgusting and it's disgraceful. And yes, it's a lot of women, but it's also a lot of men. And a lot of these phone calls that they were getting were from men, and they said that. So I think it's not about being negative. It's not about saying it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. I think there's a massive amount of misinformation. So now coming forward, the state has a role to play where they can educate young boys and young girls on there is no such thing as a normal family anymore. You can have one mum, one dad, you can have step parents, you can have two mums, you can have two dads. And it's taken away that traditional mother, father, two kids and a dog and a picket white fence. It's taken away that, but it's not removing the role of a mother. Everybody has a mother. A mother is so important in a child's life, but you also have to be flexible to society where there's changes and there's different aspects to that.
Yeah, there was definitely a move to reduce the role of a mother being associated with a woman.
We see
HSE have in the past sent out documents about people with the cervix or chest feeders, you know, so I mean it.
Yeah, that's not right. I mean, if you give birth to a child, you're the child's mother. But then there's aspects of surrogacy and adoption where you have parents that have raised a child from when they were born until, you know, forever amen, and they are not seen as a child's mother.
Okay.
So
yep.
I think maybe the referendum, there was a lot of misinformation on that and the legislation wasn't properly lined out and there was definitely mistakes made in that. But I think it wasn't so much as to take the mother away from society completely.
I want to bring John in and I'll come back to you, Joe. John, what's your point of view?
Quite straightforward. Most people will remember this thing called the 1916 Proclamation and the Constitution, where everybody's rights are shared equally, and to interfere with that would be an offence. I mean, where has all that gone? We have got completely driven by social media. Some people have been driven mad by it. We need much more control of that and a much more educated debate on it. Don't tell me that that can't be achieved, because social media is fairly vital to our future generations, but it's how it's used, and it's more important, it's how it's been totally abused, and it's very anti-women, to be quite honest. And we should be fit to do something about that. We should be fit to bar people from using it in such a negative way. And it does attract all the trolls and all the negativity of the whole day. And until the government does something to stop that and to ensure that nobody is abused, and that is probably another 20 years away with the way legislation goes, we will hear debates in the Dáil on a regular basis that simply seem to reassure us as if they have done something where they haven't done. The use of social media is the greatest thing in the world, provided it's used in a fair and honest manner. That's not happening. There's a right-wing element in this country who have really abused it very, very badly, and it has been used to the detriment of women of all ages and all groups. And sadly, all we can do is sit back and talk about it. Like, what we're talking here about is pretty important. It's important for us to highlight it. But at national level, and indeed at EU level, where is the protection? How do you stop people abusing you online?
Well, you don't look at it, you see. Joe, just before the break, you know, John mentioned about spreading information online, but it's on air too. And you know, like, I think people listening and judging by a couple of comments, listening to your comments about Muslim people, for an example, would be of the view that, you know, and would share the view that we're being overrun.
Well, look, I'm not saying we're being overrun, but there are values that we have, Christian values that have shaped this country.
Yes, but our fear has to be proportionate. Like, you would know, would you, what percentage of the Irish population is Muslim? Well, 1.6%. And here's another thing that might actually surprise people out there, but it might not. You know, what percentage of the UK population is Muslim? 6%. 6%. 6. And even in the most densely populated areas like London, it's 15%. So it's still, you know, just over 1 in 10. So the idea that the Muslimification of countries is a bit of a...
Yeah, but if you had 1.6% of the native Irish men of this country holding the views and articulating the trad views, or even some of the Muslim views with regards to women, it would be seen as terrible, and you'd be lynched on this radio station, and you'd be lynched on social media. This is the hypocrisy
not
of what
really,
I'm...
Not really, because I see maybe 15, 20 court cases of Irish fellas beating women up, raping them, assault, historical sexual abuse. Not a comment under the Facebook posts, but one Muslim guy does something and there's 300 or 400 comments. I don't want to get shot here. I'm just trying to have a legit conversation. So you would get away with it if you're white and Irish, Joe, because you kind of see it.
I think we've come a long way, thank God, in this country toward respecting women and women respecting men both ways. And unfortunately, maybe the social media has led a decline in that in some regards, and the objectification of women. We know that has happened. But here's the reality with the coming of feminism. Single motherhood is up 700%. And that's not good for a society that women are struggling. It's the women that struggle. And I'm saying this as a father and as a man. Are we supporting women in the ways we should? Mental health, depression among women is up 250%. Are we supporting mothers the way we should?
No, we're not. No, and you're right there. But I mean, like, I'm going to go back to India here now. And I've on the podcast this week, I've got Declan Meehan and Padraig McGuinness, two a same-sex couple. And the abuse they get online, up to threats of murder. And India, I'm sure if she were to open X or wherever it might be, what she might get as a woman. We don't get that, Joe. Me and you don't get that. I'll get a couple of people saying I'm pro-Muslim, which, you know, I could brush it off because I know it's not the case. I'm just trying to have a convo. But I'm not going to have to open up my messages, generally speaking, like Declan, Padraig and you, India, might.
Well, like, I mean, I haven't even gotten into politics yet, but I have gotten abuse online. I've had TikToks made about me. I've had comments under Instagram posts for when I went to my Debs. And funny enough, it wasn't Muslims. It was white Irish men that were from Donegal themselves. And any of the abuse that women get online, the majority of the abuse and the comments under their posts are from white Irish men.
Yeah, but I do think, I think it's very important, though, and I've said this to people in the highest... in the highest positions in this county, it is incredibly important that there is cultural education for people
Absolutely.
Coming here, because there is a genuine problem where people can be coming from other countries, as Joe says accurately, with a completely different view of social discourse and what have you. And that is the elephant in the room. And nothing has ever been done in this county, according to the lady I was speaking to a couple of months, to actually actively address that.
I agree with you there, Greg. But I also have to say that there is people that come into this country. There's also women. There's also children that come from different countries. They make lives for themselves in Donegal. They're working in Letterkenny Hospital.
Yeah,
they're working in Ard McSivna. Like my
they
nana.
I interview those people and they share these concerns. You don't have to be white and native Irish to have concerns about immigration.
I agree that there is issues with immigration and there is unsafety around unvetted immigrants coming in. But I think the way it's described online, it's as if they're just overrunning the town. But there is also an aspect to that where there is families that come in from different countries and they integrate into the community, but they're suffering from abuse. Like my brother is 11 years old. He was born in Sligo. He's been raised in Lahey in Donegal town. He plays football. He plays golf. But he was called a packy by a child in his class at 10 years old.
And he's a lovely young lad as well, too.
He's a lovely young lad. No, so there's a lot of issues.
By the way, whether he's lovely or not, that shouldn't happen. But it just breaks my heart that he should have to come home having heard that. John, a minute to you, if you wanted.
You know, we're talking about all these things and they're all relevant. But ever since 9 o'clock this morning, I'm getting a steady stream of complaints and concerns and issues about the Polestar being blocked up today again. Polestar is choking more than Letterkenny. It's choking Downing, Svan, Gweedore, as far as the Rosses. Everyone is suffering. You can quote me on that, okay, Bernard. And another one says, I have resigned from the Chamber of Commerce Council over lack of transport, no transport hub. It was meant to be finished in November 25. We have no town bus. We are going backwards. Active travel plan can't be finished under the transport hub is in place because where do the buses go with Mr. Chippy? And so on in this picture, gridlock, all that. That's going on now for the past hour or so. It shows where the priorities of people of Donegal are this morning.
Indeed. And you know what it also shows? Caroline won't give me time to read comments, but John McAteer gets time to read comments.
Oh, dear.
John, I'm only joking.
Can you apologise to her for me? It'll be the first time ever.
I will not apologise to you, John. You can do whatever you like, son. John McAteer, always a pleasure. Have a great weekend. Editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. India, thanks so much for being part of a very, really interesting conversation. I've learned stuff and that's always good. Have a great weekend yourself, India. Bye-bye. Joe, always a pleasure. You know, your kind of guy needs the hour to yourself, really, if the truth be told, because... you always come up with some really interesting points. So thanks very much for that.
You good?
Slánga fóill. Before we move on, just want to send our best wishes, as you might have heard on the news, to Councillor Albert Doherty. Whether you agree or disagree with his politics, a very nice gentleman. He stepped away from politics for a short period of time. He stepped away from his council duties, I should say, as he deals with a recent cancer diagnosis. He said in a statement shared in his socials, if you have any support that he would ordinarily provide, you can contact the constituency office of Deputy Pádraig McLaughlin during his absence. So we wish him a full and speedy recovery. And the sooner he's back answering the calls and doing his bits and bobs as a councillor, the better. So just passing on our best wishes to Councillor Albert Doherty. Dr. Joe is correct. The country is being destroyed by the government and its ultra-woke policies. The country should ban alien culture practices which oppress women, such as the burqa face covering cloth. I can't remember the last time I saw someone with a burqa on, but I take your point. Mohammed is the most popular baby's name in Galway. Stop it telling us we are racist. We're entitled. Well, who says anyone's racist? We're entitled to our own Christian country. We never invaded any country. What are they doing here? I feel like if I'm fact checked, people might think I'm coming across a certain way. I can get those statistics for you on that hospital. That was a small sample size of a Galway City hospital. But anyway, listen, I don't want to. Why should I stick my head above the parapet and get it cleaned off? But that's not exactly as it's outlined there. Oh, Dr. Joe Kelly, you're correct. Bless you for your courage to say it as it is. The facts another. Isn't it funny? With all the filth on TV and porn online for years, it seems the government is only stepping in when there's talk of traditional roles. Also, sadly, government policies result in most families needing two incomes to have a roof over their heads. So women are being forced to work or delay starting a family, which is actually the point Indy was making as well. Greg, our Christian values are being squashed left, right and centre. And what values are replacing them with what? We're not allowed to articulate common sense truths. Well, get them into us. You can articulate them here. I feel we as a people can't have a say now. And you're saying about Muslim attacks. It's not one culture that has come to our country. It's various cultures of attitudes and rules that don't suit Ireland. And also, we should all follow the rules in Ireland, and people that come here, they know the rules but don't care. And Ireland has destroyed their own culture through their policies, and we should be out of the EU. There's a lot in that. Thanks for that. Yeah, as I say, though, the Muslim population is 1.6% of the population. So if there is any attacks on, you know, Christian values or whatever, it's being perpetrated by the absolute majority, who maybe themselves want to see an end to that type of stuff. I don't know. Right, now, coming up on this week's episode of our weekly The Greg Hughes Podcast. By the way, just to let you know, we've new episodes released every single Friday at 11 a.m. with a whole range of guests talking about different topics. This week, I'm joined by independent councillor Declan Meehan and his husband, local GP Dr. Padraig McGuinness, for a candid conversation about life, both in and out of the public eye. In this clip we're going to play, we pick up on whether Padraig ever had any desire to step into elected politics himself, and the increasingly toxic atmosphere that now surrounds public life. The two talk openly about the barrage of negative attention on social media, the personal cost of putting your head above the parapet, and why entering the political arena feels tougher than ever today. The full episode is released, as I say, today on the Highland Radio website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also watch the full video version from 11 a.m. on the Greg Hughes Podcast channel on YouTube.
Yeah, I suppose there definitely was a time in my past, Greg, where I thought that I would have ran for public office. I don't think so anymore. I don't think it's my vibe. I'm very happy being a GP and doing lots of stuff on the side, and very happy being the politician's husband. I don't, and you know, that's a role in itself, as you just alluded to, but also I just don't know nowadays whether I would be fit for the all-consuming public of being elected representative, of the online abuse you get, of the online torture you get in particular, or the threats and all those things. And I don't, thankfully. No one seems to be attacking me online for being a GP or for advocating for certain things. And there's
I haven't asked my tough questions yet.
Yeah.
just wait. No, I'm only joking.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think it's an easy job.
That's really, really regrettable. Because to be honest with you, there are perhaps not more vulnerable demographics, but like women in politics as well. Mm-hmm. It's I'm not saying there's a hierarchy, but to some extent there is, you know, of online abuse and all that type of stuff. It's crazy that it's got to that. And we'll tease that out a little bit more with you. But there's a guy sitting to your right who is in the public eye. We're having this conversation right now, and it's quite likely, you know, let's all be honest, quite likely a clip might be pulled out at some point and framed in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Look,
where I'm coming from. We don't, and that is, unfortunately, it's something I have to accept, you have to accept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all part of it now, isn't it? And like, it's a shame in some ways that it's part of it, but that is the world we live in, and that's the reality. You know, social media in particular is an exceptionally good tool at getting your message out when you're a public representative, of keeping people informed of what you're doing or responding to queries or whatever else. But it's a double-edged sword, big time. And that is unfortunate. It goes with the territory. It's not something that we should just go, oh, well, you accept it and you get on with it. But it is part of it. And I don't know what the answer to it is. I've said this before. I thank God that my mother isn't on social media to see some of the stuff that, you know, is sometimes said or spread or whatever. But yeah, it is. It's the worst part of.
I know you don't mind criticism. That's not what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
But do you? what kind of abuse do you get that we might not know about, if you know what I mean? Like, you do hear, certainly on the national stage or people in the public eye, you know, they will get literal threats on their health, yeah, or intimidation. Or is it, you know, adult version of school ground bullying stuff? Like, what is your...
It's all of the above, unfortunately. Right. So I have received death threats of violence against our home. That it has happened a few times previously. There's also obviously a lot of homophobic abuse that's kind of leveled. Now, you know, you say all that, and that is true, and it's horrible. When you're the public representative, and I can only speak for myself in this regard, but you can kind of not necessarily brush it off, but you can take it on the chin and go, that's grand. Mm-hmm. The annoying thing is that the people around you are affected by it too. Yeah, so like my husband or my family or my friends or whatever. And then they're worried for you, and they're worried for, you know, anything that's been said or anything that might happen or might be said in the future.
And Park, would you find yourself in the situation where you might see something and you would raise it whichever way you wish to raise it to Declan, and he bats it away and goes, look, it's just blah, 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 blah. And you're like, no, excuse me.
We tend to try and not
having that.
We tend to try and not talk about it. One of Declan's best mates, Eamon, does a lot of his social media monitoring, I guess, and probably protects us from a lot. And I know that Eamon doesn't tell us half of what he deletes and what we don't see and what he hides and so on. I think it is tough, you know, and I think particularly the threats on Declan's life, which happened a couple of times, and the threats on our home and the threats to burn us out of our home, and, you know, having the Gardaí call and having to get cameras and panic alarms and, you know, thinking about...
That's proper stuff, like.
Yeah,
It's not just like, you know, block... No, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's real.
You know, I remember the first time it happened, looking around our bedroom, being like, well, if someone comes to attack me in this room tonight, what's around that I can defend us with? And that's a huge invasion of your, you know, anyone can take criticism. We can all do that. That is different to saying that you're going to burn down someone's home, I think, is just where it starts to become dangerous. And unfortunately, you know, trying to action that with the Gardaí and stuff is difficult. Now, there are stuff ongoing, but it is difficult then because the laws, unfortunately, aren't terribly great at protecting people in the public.
What's it going to take for that to happen? Because sometimes I wonder, have we hit the peak, you know, and will we see sort of this sort of online stuff, this rhetoric retreating? Maybe if there's a ban on social media for under 16s, inevitably that means grown-ups are also going to have to ID themselves to prove that they're not under that age. Or is it going to take, God forbid, another incident where someone is targeted, someone follows through in it, Porrig, and then all of a sudden we have this huge... That being said, there's been some very high-profile deaths in UK politics. Yeah. It hasn't really fundamentally changed.
There's been three MPs killed in the last number of years,
And it hasn't necessarily...
No, I think it has to be... I think there has to be a genuine targeted campaign from the Gardaí that says that, you know, it's fine to criticise someone and disagree with their politics or whatever, but it's not okay... And once you do that, should be considered in the same way if someone had attacked you with something or someone threatens to attack you with something. It's the same thing online than it is in person, because you actually don't know what that person is capable of. And I've certainly seen in my job where people, you're just not 100% sure what anybody is capable of at any point, for lots and a variety of reasons. I do think that's something that for politicians and for people in the public eye, not even just politicians, people in the public eye in general across the state, there will need to be a change in legislation that makes that there's a much bigger consequence for those people doing those things.
Yeah, I think it's the legislative piece that's important there, because the Gardaí can only enforce what's in law. They can't if it's not there. And I think that that's something that, you know, needs to change from Leinster House, basically. They need to legislate for that. And it's not about clamping down on people's freedom of speech. It's about actually identifying where there's threatening language used.
But you see, once you got to that first part of that sentence, that's where politicians don't want to go down there.
Because
I think you would need to have a, you know, 90% approval rate to have the balls to do something like that.
Exactly.
And what is also really strange is the size of this world, that you can actually see who's pulling the strings in the anti-censorship movement and for what reasons. Mm-hmm. So it's not really an Irish decision, and it's not really a European decision. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a Mark Zuckerberg, Donald Trump, yeah. Elon Musk. And you can actually see where it's all yeah. happening, mm-hmm. whereby...
But when they're constantly sitting at the top table with the world's leaders, you can kind of absolutely see where some of the power actually lies. But, like, I suppose the other thing is, you know, you are subject to some online abuse. Certainly never mind being criticised. I really welcome when someone contacts me and says, I'm not happy with how you voted on this. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy with what you said in Highland Radio or whatever, and to engage and have a discussion on it. And usually, you know, 9 times out of 10, those interactions, like, are so, so, so valuable.
Yeah. All right, and that was just a sample of the conversation. That is Independent Councillor Declan Meehan and his husband, local GP, a very popular GP in the Fanaderry and beyond, Dr. Padraig McGuinness. We talk about the campaigning as it relates to healthcare, the hub. It's lighthearted as well, too. There's a bit of crack in there. So that's available for you to listen or watch from 11 a.m. whenever it suits you on our website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts for that matter. And you can watch full episodes on the YouTube channel, The Greg Hughes Podcast. So that means you can watch it on your TV if you wish. Rightio, let's take a break because I have a lot to get through. Good luck, by the way, if you're playing the bingo today. Now, there's a few highlights of the year from a TV perspective. The All-Ireland Final, the Late Late Show Christmas special. And also the Rose of Tralee. It's an absolutely huge event. And we've got two participants in it now. So I'll just let you know that the Rose of Tralee, of course, returns to beautiful County Kerry from next Friday, August 14th, runs to Tuesday the 18th. 32 roses taking part in the competition this year from across Ireland and as far away as America, Canada, New Zealand and the United Arab Emirates. And I believe there's actually a UAE Donegal connection there as well. Cara Hamilton is the Derry Rose. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am all good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And Emma Nealis is the Donegal Rose.
Hey, Greg.
How are you keeping?
I'm good.
Cara, how did this come to happen for you?
Well, this all happened because of my auntie Anne-Marie had signed me up for the Derry Rose selection, kind of without my knowledge at first, and then eventually told me. And yeah, that was back in September, and then came around to April and I had to do the selection night down at the Everglades Hotel. And for some reason, I ended up being selected as the Day Rose for 2026.
So sure it was that much of an accident, right?
It was very unexpected.
That's it, right? So taking part is one thing, but getting the sash is another, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a completely different thing. I was very nervous for the Derry night, and then I just didn't expect to be chosen at all. And then when I was chosen, it was just so overwhelming. You're getting photos with everybody and everyone's coming up to you, and especially if you're not expecting it, it is very overwhelming.
Now, you're busy between your education and sport as well. You're representing Na Piarsa Dhuire Trasna, and also to where are you at in your studies? Because the end game here is effectively the An Gáis Síochána, isn't it?
So. Yes, I just graduated there 2 weeks ago from Liverpool John Murray University and my degree of forensic psychology and criminal justice. So then hoping after the antics down in Tralee to join the guards then. Maybe move on to crime scene investigating.
That's what kind I was going like, to yeah, ask. Yeah,
the detective so, route would yeah. be what I would like to do.
Well, of course, obviously, having the education behind you, that puts you in great stead. Obviously, because you know it's happening, you got involved, but perhaps never knew it would get to this point, right?
Yeah.
What's your feelings about getting up on stage and getting to be part of the big part of this?
Very nervous.
Yeah.
Very, very nervous to get up on stage. It's not something that I've ever done, you know, any type of performing or being on stage or anything like this. So I know I'm going to be extremely nervous, but hopefully I've been calmed down because we're all in the same boat. You know, there's 31 other girls doing the exact same thing. So I'm sure we'll all calm each other down.
And I suppose it's like, and I would hate to have to try and do it, but well, you just be yourself, but also there is an amount of time in which you want to get yourself across in too, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe there's tropes you want to avoid or there's things you want to say. And like, it's not, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not helping, am I? Well, you know what I mean.
No, you're okay.
But what I'm trying to say is I'm full of admiration. I couldn't do it. Emma, it's Nellis? Nellis,
yeah.
I was right the first time. 24-year-old teacher of history and English at Errigal College in Letterkenny. How did you, and you're representing Garton, sponsored by the Lagoon and Termin, how did you end up being part of this?
Well, I was at training one day and the 2014 Canada Rose, Catherine Robinson, she was just came to her first training session, and after that she sent me the poster saying you should apply. Never thought anything of it. I was like, oh yeah, yeah, no bother. About a month went by and I never did anything about it, and then her and my sister kind of ganged up on me and made me apply. Never thinking that I was sitting here.
It's sort of like dragged kicking and screaming to the competition. But you're also incredibly busy, you know, between volunteering, coaching, working in the community, and also your career as well. It seems to be always the busiest people that take something else on.
Yeah, it's a busy time, but I was saying to Cara, I'm lucky in the sense that I'm off this summer. I work in Errigal College, so that was my first year newly qualified. So now I'm off. This is my first summer off since I was like 14, so I'm glad I'm off, but it's definitely been a busy summer.
I would say so, because under the way this is run now, and it's a huge achievement in and of itself, you're the Donegal Rose for 2 years.
For 2 years.
So this you're in your first year.
Yeah.
And is that the same for...
Yeah, same for me as well, for 2 years.
And both of you are going to be on the show as well, because I remember a couple of years back they changed it around. But this is it's a good system. But it talks to the popularity of the competition. What... Is it pure experience, Emma, that you're in this for, or what?
To be honest, I'm just here for the crack.
That's it. Just
to be a good time and to meet the rest of the girls. Do you know, you get to meet people from all around the world, like the UAE, Rose, Enya. I met the
She's from Donegal, Rose. Is that right? Is Enya from
She's
Donegal?
She's from Donegal, Donegal Roots, so her mum is from Gweedore.
Excellent. We'll claim Enya as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's getting to meet all these amazing women from all over the world, and we go on this big adventure together. It's really amazing.
And have you hooked up yet?
Yes. So I've been to a couple of selection nights, and you have as well. So Cara was at my selection night, and then we went to the Galway races there last week. There was 23 of us down there, so we got to meet a few of the international
icebreaker
ones.
Kind of meeting everybody and like getting like a taste of like what the tour in Tralee will be like.
And not unlike the likes of the Mary from Dunlow and others at Carr, there's a camaraderie there, isn't there? I mean, you've got 31 people supporting you. It's not, well, maybe it will be, but it's not, I'm trying to use the bitchy word, but I'm not going to, right? Because I don't want to use that word, but it's not like that. There's a camaraderie.
We've already won, do you know what I mean? Like, well, in my eyes, I've already won. I didn't expect to be the Dare Rose whatsoever, so we get to meet girls from all over the world and then get to go travel around Ireland for free. So, like, to me, that's kind of the one, do you know what I mean?
Coming at you there,
that's it all done. I know, like, when would I get to go down to Kerry? It's so far from us as well. Like, when are we ever going to get to go down there again? So, you know,
that's... to experience it like
just,
that.
Just enjoy it, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, you see, firstly, you can't lose, so you have to enjoy it. Both of you are already representing your counties for a couple of years, and, you know, what comes, comes.
Exactly.
Do you have to do something on stage on the night, or is it just chatting? Is it optional, or?
Yeah, it's optional because I'm not. I don't have any talent.
But
so.
I thought, I was chatting to a former judge of the Rose of Tralee, and I thought, I asked the person, I says, would that be a disadvantage? And I says, no, sure, it gives you more time to chat.
Yeah.
So there isn't, you know what I mean?
It's for entertainment.
It's not based on talent. It's all for entertainment purposes, but of course it's for entertainment.
Are you doing anything?
I was supposed to be doing jiving, but that didn't really work out because there's no jiving escorts this year. But I am doing line dancing, so I'm going to teach Dahi or Catherine to line dance.
Brilliant.
But that's depending on if there's time or whatever. They have to work out the timings of the show.
Yeah, but that's the plan.
That's the plan at this stage.
And David James and his band are performing down there as well, which is so we've got that's from the northwest here between yourselves and your David, and we'll find other Donegal connections before before. And part of it too is promoting yourselves, you know, the where you represent and the festival itself. That's part of why we're chatting now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well,
it's great to be able to represent Donegal, and I'm sure you're the same for Derry. Like,
I know, because you're probably a pure Donegal woman, I'm a pure Derry girl. Like, so do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't do it half my others over here. We're all in.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant stuff. And all your students are going to be cheering you on, are they?
They are, yeah. They're all excited. I think the boys in the school were kind of like, what is this, miss? Is it your birthday or something because of the sad? But the girls are all excited. You know, they're like, what night's it on? Oh, yeah. And the wee girls that I coach as well, the under eights.
And if the truth be told, that hasn't all really started yet. Even though it's just around the corner, you know, the way we are, it'll be just when it's on that we'll all be... Cara, you've tons of support as well between you.
Yeah, my Gaelic club have been a very big support, especially the girls on my team, and then from all the other teams as well. They've been really cheering me on, so I'll have to let them know on Sunday what night I'm on, so they can watch it. Hopefully,
I think there's going to be a few watch parties.
Yeah, probably.
I think it was the New York Mary at the Mary from Dunlow. Her thing was to rugby tackle her cousin who was her escort. If you haven't seen the video.
I haven't seen it. I must look it up because I've seen a few videos from that.
I've seen the Malkin video.
Yeah, that's funny. But listen out for the thump at the back of his head. All right, okay. Listen, it's brilliant stuff. And I mean, I think we're past this whole, you know, lovely girls thing now, aren't we?
Yeah. It's much more than that.
But even the conversation, because, I mean, you don't judge someone on necessarily their academic achievement. But, I mean, like, this is an opportunity, you know, for you to talk about your voluntary work, your careers, the fact that you can look glam but still operate at the highest level in business or the guards or whatever, you know. So it's only a positive thing, I think.
And it gives women the opportunity to speak on an international level as well. Do you know, we don't get maybe that opportunity as often as...
without having a talent or anything, like just being able to be like
a
normal girl.
Who you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's you're chosen for a reason, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone's seen something and you do be able to represent your county, so...
And it's not Ireland got talent, you know, sometimes if it's not perfect, it's when it's fun. Do you know what I mean? It's just the crack. It's like milking the cows thing. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. All right. The best of luck, Emma.
Thank you.
So exciting. I can't wait to watch now that there's Donegal interest. You know, I look forward to that. I'll be waiting for you to come on. Last on the second night, don't you know?
Probably. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's typical when I go to watch
something. That's to keep you intrigued.
Yes,
or the first on the first night.
Yeah, that's it. That's true. When are the interviews happening? Or has that happened?
Well, Saturday and Sunday, isn't it?
So we have individual interviews and then group interviews. Yeah. So that happens over the weekend before the live show.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, this will be fantastic. You will do fantastic, and you already have. Let's not make any mistake about that. Emma, thank you so much for calling in. The best of luck.
Thanks, Emily.
And Emma Nealis, the 2026 Donegal Rose for 2 years, as is Cara Hamilton, the Derry Rose. The best of luck to the both of you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Okay, very shortly we're going to be crossing to, Letterkenny, sure we're from Letterkenny. We're going to be going down to Summer Sessions in Letterkenny. It starts this weekend, runs to the 22nd of August. So we'll be getting to that in a moment. Thanks again to Cara and Emma. Both are on next week. Can you wish the two girls the best at the Rose of Tralee from Siobhan, of course. Best wishes to the Dunluí Band and Clonhilly Junior Band, who are heading to the Fly in Belfast this weekend, and the Clonhilly Junior Band, who are heading down to the Rose of Tralee after that. Another, I wish the Derry and Donegal Rose all the best. Hopefully one of them will bring home the crown. That comes in from Joe and Gort Hawk. Indeed, fingers crossed. That's perfect, Corinne. In relation to our first hour, the Senate in the US have voted 8-5 to hold Anthony Fauci in contempt. Fauci, isn't it? Greg, while your discussions was very good, Letterkenny's problem was because of bad local planning, a lack of infrastructure during the 90s and noughties as the town grew in excess of the national average. That comes in from Daniel. Joey's right, 100%. Great to hear someone like him on saying what our own representatives are afraid to. The town is not in a good place, I presume you're talking about Letterkenny. Tell India to have a drive around it at night time and it's nothing but young men hanging around every corner. It's not a safe town. Well, it's even perception, right? And that is down to how people are being accommodated, congregated. And we haven't learnt from lessons in Britain, elsewhere. You know, people are far better out, even in very small numbers spread about. Thank the Lord, Dr. Kelly is on the show this morning. He's the only person on your station that understands local government law. The rest of you should need to study it yourselves. You haven't a clue. Well, that'd be nice, will you, please? The Fianna Fáil woman asking about accountability of works completed. Why didn't you ask her those who's accountable for the Children's Hospital and bike sheds? You're very one-sided. You're not very open-minded. I don't know who you're talking about here, but... you know, you could argue that you had two people, John McAteer, Dr. Joe Kelly, who were of a like mind, and in Indy Kennedy, who's a member of Fianna Fáil. I think, you know, she's entitled to her opinion. Also, it should be noted that Fianna Fáil locally would say that they voted against active travel. Now, historically, we've had to travel to Belfast, to Dublin, to Marley Park, wherever it might be, to see the big acts. But thankfully, we've seen developments in recent years. That means for those that it suits, which is arguably the majority, those big acts are coming to us through various events, not least Summer Sessions, which kicks off today. Let's cross down to the... Are you in the VIP tent already there, Corinne? Oh, I can't hear you. Are we muted? Why can't I hear you? Oh, no, you're on tie line. Sorry, Joe. Relax.
Tie line.
Yeah, no, Joe's heart. I could hear it beating from here, right? Yeah, so you already found your way into the VIP section by the looks
of
things.
And I think I'm just going to stay here now for the next 3 weeks, Greg.
Right. You have with you the man behind it all, Shane. How are you getting on?
Hiya, Greg. How are you?
Good to see you. It's all coming to fruition now. The planning for this, of course, is... how long your first act booked for this year? When was that? Probably last year.
Yeah, just the end of August, early September last year. We announced obviously the first acts, but they would have been booked 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 months in advance. So you are always definitely booking ahead. A lot of planning goes in well in advance of the August series, Craig. Yeah.
Right, and there's a big mix of stuff, isn't there? So talk us through what's starting happening this weekend.
Yeah, so this year, for the first year, we have a seated arena, Greg. So traditionally, it was always standing shows. In year one, we started off with 4 shows. In year two, it was 6 shows. But year three now, we have 8 shows, and 4 of them are seated. So we've got tiered seating left and right, and we've got tiered seating on the flat. There's 2,000 capacity seated. So we've got Paul Smith, the comedian from Liverpool, international comedian that's going around the world at the minute doing arenas. He's also going to do the SSE arena in Belfast. Actually, it's the O2 now and the 3 arena in Dublin next year. But we're very lucky to have him come for 2 nights, Friday and Saturday. Still tickets available, but very close to sold out. And then on the Sunday, we've got a new event, which is an evening at the darts. We have 4 darts players coming from the UK. That are normally seen on Sky Sports with the 180s and all that great fun that goes with it. So the arena will turn into a huge darts event on the Sunday.
And if people sort of see the crack at the darts or the Premier League of darts in Dublin or Belfast, this is a show like that as well. Fascinated about the seating, because to be honest, when I was looking at some of it, I was wondering, I wonder how that might work. So are you able to bring seating in and out dependent on what you have up on the stage, Shane?
So the team have been working very hard this last 2 weeks, Greg, to build a site, and part of that is the seating plan. This year, for the first year, we've also put down flooring, which is a huge investment for the festival, and for the seating it's required to ensure for health and safety and for comfort on the seats. So they go in, the 4 seated shows. The 4th one that I didn't mention was the K-Pop Forever Arena Tour, which is going around the world as well. They've done 3 nights in the 3 arena in Dublin, imagine, 3 nights in there. I think they've done about 12,000 tickets. And they've done 2 nights in the Belfast arena, and they also done 5 nights at the Marquee in Cork, which is a huge venue as well, a 5,000 capacity venue. So really looking forward to that. That's children and families. It's K-Pop Forever. It's not Demon Hunters. It's a mixture of all the K-Pop. Demon Hunters will feature. But it's important, obviously, that people are aware that it's a mixture of all the K-pop, because I think with all these shows, there was confusion.
But I think if you know, you know. If you're into your K-pop, you know what that is. Corinne, what are you looking forward to?
Well, definitely the Memories Day. We had a great day here last year at that.
Ironically, none of yous could remember it the next day. I'm joking.
True, Greg,
I'm
true.
Joking.
We still made it to work.
I'm
we still
joking,
made it to work, right?
Is, yeah. So the Memories Day, that is where, you know, it's
that's
just a
next
trick.
Sunday.
Yeah. So I'll just carry on with the after the Wednesday, Greg, the
All
city
right,
shows
on, we'll
they
yeah.
come out. So you were asking, Do they come in or do they come out? That Seaton Arena setup will come out. So the tiered seating comes out on the Wednesday night, Thursday morning. All the loose seats in rows come out on the flat, and then it becomes a standing venue then for the second weekend and the following weekend. So the Cian de Croe is on Friday of next week. With Jamie McIntyre, who just opened for Luke Combs and Slane. So they're talking about him being the next Kingfisher and Amble. So we're really excited to see Jamie McIntyre, as well as obviously the headliner, Cian de Croe. The Saturday night then is Deacon Blue, Proclaimers, Cry Before Dawn, Matt Benson and Connor McGlave. That's a huge show as well. And the Sunday is the Memories, as Corinne mentioned, which is a plus 21 back to the 90s pop and dance, which is hugely popular last year. It starts early, it's a 2:30, it's like a day thing, and then we go home, we finish up a bit earlier. So it's a real good vibe. You're out early, you're home early, and it's plus 21s. It was nearly plus 25s last year on demographic. And then the following weekend, then UB40 featuring the main man, the original singer, Ali Campbell.
And that's critical. Yeah, that's critical, isn't it? Because, you know, sometimes UB40 have toured without Ali, and that's fine, and they put on a fantastic show, and they're entitled to do that. But to have him himself up there, is you don't get that very often. So if you were a fan of UB40, you're getting the proper full experience of UB40.
Yeah, and it's the first time him being in the Northwest. He might have been here in the 70s at the very start, or the early 80s, but he hasn't played the Northwest with UB40 since then. So huge demand on them tickets, Greg, and I can't wait to hear in the massive arena, the Red Wine and the Kingston Town and all them massive hits that they have. So that's Saturday, the 22nd of August, and obviously you can get all the tickets for the shows on the summer-sessions.ie on the website.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, there have been fantastic acts last year, picture this, previous years. You could just... So in other words, in terms of the acts, you know, people know what to expect. So really it's the experience where you start investing and changing things up. And you've referenced that. I think the seating, particularly for some of those events, fantastic. Though there's great stage views, actually. I can attest to that from wherever you are, even without the seating. But for the darts and for the comedy, you want a sort of that amphitheatre effect. Another VIP bar, more food. So the focus this year has been, of course, on ranking up the talent, but also that experience of coming in, you're getting that full big festival feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's obviously for us, it's a huge investment for the festival, where we were last year in terms of site setup. It takes over 2 weeks to do, but this year, as you mentioned, we've invested even more to give a better experience than what was. I'm not sure if we can do that based on the feedback we thankfully got last year, but we really want to make it even better and better. So as you say, we've got the flooring in, we've got the seating in, that comes out. We've also got a bigger stage and a bigger production. We've also added a left screen and a right screen, which is massive for the atmosphere and for seeing up close shots with the cameramen, which is a new feature as well this year. And obviously we've added a VIP bar because of the demand, so we now have two VIP bars, and there's other bars dotted around the site. There's more food vendors, so I suppose the good thing for the visitor or the visitor coming to the county or the attendee coming to the festival is they're going to get an even better experience. For us, it's a bigger investment, but we feel it's worthy of giving the best experience they can, because we really, for Letterkenny and Donegal and the Northwest, we really want to grow this as much as we can and you know, bring the 30,000 and 40,000 to Donegal, not just Letterkenny, because they're staying all over the county, looking at the correspondence that's coming in and the ticket buyers and where they're travelling from, the UK, all over Ireland, some coming from all over Europe. There's 3 or 4 countries dotted in the ticket buyers, so really, really exciting to see that. And for Letterkenny and Donegal, it's really important, because you know the hassle and the difficulty festivals are having, so we're delighted to be thriving.
Yeah, for sure. And you heard Corinne mention Memories Day, Cascada, Bass Hunter, All I Ever Wanted, Mark McCabe, and all that. The Proclaimers and Deacon Blue, what a double act they are. Cian de Croe, K-Pop Forever World Tour. So that's all of your K-pop hits. Of course, you'll hear some of those songs that you're familiar with from the big film. And then UB40... featuring the main man, Ali Campbell. UB40 named after the Dole slip in Birmingham, if I'm not mistaken. That's a little fun fact for you. Corinne, come on, give us some more highlights. It can't just be Bass Hunter and Cascada you're looking forward to.
No, I'm actually looking forward to seeing Cian de Croe as well.
I came to picture this last year, and I wouldn't have been like a massive picture this fan. I liked a few of their songs, but it was such an amazing night. So I feel like Cian DeCrow is going to.
And I think he's going to blow up. He's going to blow up, actually. I think, and Shane suggested. I think it would cost him quite a few quid to get him in 27 compared to 26 because his star's going up the way.
Jamie McIntyre as well, actually, really looking forward to seeing him. He's been doing a lot, especially with the Slane opening, so that's going to be exciting.
All right, okay, super stuff, all exciting. You can look forward to a bit now, Shane. With the seated floor, it makes it more accessible for people with a disability, I presume, Shane, just a caller asking. That's a good advantage of that, of course.
Yeah, very, very important to us, Greg, from year one, obviously, making the festival accessible, friendly, and putting in features that need to be put in. Again, it's more investment, but it's about positive feedback and the visitor experience. So we do have accessibility lane, accessibility queue lane. We also have accessibility platform with the ramp for the viewing area. We also have accessibility toilets. And we've also put in the floor, which helps with accessibility, getting around the inside of the big top. It's just important to be aware for the accessibility that there are no accessibility tickets for sale. It's general sale tickets, and then they apply for the Nimbus verification, which yes. which is basically the approval to use the accessibility. However, if somebody wants to buy a ticket the day before or the day of and they don't happen to get that done in time, if they come along anyway, we will be able to do our best to assist them. The wheelchair will be the priority for the accessibility platform, but we do put in a respite area as well, where there's an additional 10 or 15 chairs for people to use for a couple of minutes if they need to sit down, and then they may get well up done. Again, you Good know, stuff. Just to give that extra space. So yeah, we're very, very accessible friendly. Yeah,
well thought out. There's park and ride and all that type of stuff. Listen, to check it all out, go to the website summer-sessions.ie. Corinne, thanks very much indeed. We'll see you soon.
Right, just before Shane. You go, sorry, can I just jump in? I just should have mentioned that the park and ride is important. So this weekend's park and ride is coming from TK Maxx, the retail park there where TK Maxx is. That'll be this weekend, and then next weekend we'll have the park and ride from TK Maxx, the McGettigan coaches at the Dry Arch Business Park, and the Mountain Top up at the Business Park at the Mountain Top as well, just to make users or ticket holders aware that they park there, they get the shuttle bus down, and then they get the shuttle bus back to their car, because it's been working really well this last 3 years, and it's important with our local residents that we keep traffic away.
Well, I'm going to do the guard
and
job keep
the
here.
Flow of traffic, so.
I know the guards will announce that they are taking a zero tolerance approach to parking around that. And why would you need to when you've got such park and ride facilities? Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Okay, that is Shane Barr and also Corinne Temple. Get your tickets now. You can go to summer-sessions.ie. Have a fantastic weekend, everyone. That's where we have to leave it, back Monday morning at 9:00.